We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Alrighty. Good morning to all. Still is morning. Just a long one. Let me go through where we are today on the numbers, just to give people an update. The number of cases still going up. We're all in search of the apex and the other side of the mountain, but we are still headed up the mountain. Number of people tested last night was a near record amount. We tested over 18,000 people. We're testing more people than any state in the country, and I'm very proud of that. More per capita than China and South Korea. Total number of people tested, 200,000. Population of 19 million. It's not going to give you a random sample, but it's been helping us track down the positive cases. Number of positive cases, 9,298. Total cases, 75,000 cases. You see the predominance in New York City, then Westchester, then Nassau, then Suffolk, then Rockland. So you can see it's that area of density, and it spreads out from that area of density. The March of coronavirus across the state of New York continues. We're down to just two counties that don't have a case. The overall numbers, 75,000 have tested positive, 10,000 people in our hospitals, 2,700 ICU patients. Good news, 4,900, almost 5,000 people discharged. That's up 771. So people come in, they get treated, they go home. Excuse me. New York is at 75,000 cases. Next state is 16,000. California is at 7,000. So you can see New York is a magnitude of difference more than any other state. 1,550 deaths. That's up from 1,218 yesterday. Again, we're studying the charts. We're trying to study the data, follow the data. The data is uneven. It bounces. Numbers often bounce in any model. There are variables in this model. The hospitals are reporting it. So what every hospital reported that day, were they busy? Are they combining a couple of days in one? It's an imperfect reporting mechanism. But you see the basic line is still up. What the statisticians will tell you is you basically draw the straight line that the columns indicate. And you see that we're still going up, which is what we see on the overall trajectory, that we're still going up. Number of intubations was down, not much, but it was down, and that's a good sign. You also see the number of discharges going up, and that's consistent. The longer people are in, they either get treated and leave, or they get put on a ventilator, and the longer you're on a ventilator, the less likelihood you will come off the ventilator. That is the blunt truth of this situation. We have two missions overall that we are pursuing. One is the front line of this battle is our hospital system. That's what this is going to come down to. The second is social responsibility. Stay at home. Don't get infected in the first place. Don't get infected in the first place because it goes back to you're creating a burden on our healthcare system that our healthcare system cannot handle. We're talking about exceeding the capacity of our hospital system by some estimates 2 times. So what does this come down to, besides all the other issues? It comes down to not overwhelming the hospital system because those people who need acute care may not be able to get the acute care. So it's all about the hospital system. That is the front line. What we're doing is we are following the mathematical projections of the experts. We're speaking to all the healthcare professionals, all the healthcare providers, World Health Organization, National Institute of Health, Dr. Fauci, CDC, FDA, the whole alphabet soup of healthcare experts. And the mathematicians who then have different models. And we talk to about 5 different models, and we compare the models, and we try to find the median through the models. That's how we plan everything. Follow the data, follow the science. People ask me, what do you think? What do you think? I don't think about this. What do I know? I'm not an expert. I'm not opining. I talk to experts, and I follow people who know. But for the hospitals, procure equipment, identify the beds, support the staff. That's what it's been all about. Of those priorities, number one is support the staff. They are the front line, and they need relief. They are physically exhausted. Even more, they are emotionally exhausted. This is, unlike other disasters, hurricanes, earthquakes, floods, they happen, they're fast, they're over, you start rebuilding. This is different. This is ongoing, and the duration itself is debilitating and exhausting and depressing. I'm speaking to healthcare professionals who say, look, more than physically tired, I'm just emotionally tired, seeing the pain, seeing the death that they're dealing with every day. In general, I am tired of being behind this virus. We've been behind this virus from day one. The virus was in China. We knew it was in China. Unless we assume there's some immune system variation with Asian people, it was coming here. And we have been behind it from day one since it got here. And we've been playing catch up. You don't win playing catch up. We have to get ahead of it. The second rule is never underestimate your opponent. And we underestimated this virus. It's more powerful, it's more dangerous than we expected. And the third point is plan forward. Get ahead of it. Get ahead of it. Fight the fight today, yes, but anticipate the next battle and plan for the next battle. And the main battle is at the apex. We're still going up the mountain. The main battle is on the top of the mountain. That's where the main battle is going to be, the apex of the curve. And then we come down the other side of the mountain. We are planning now for the battle at the top of the mountain. That's what we are doing. Get a staffing plan ready now for the battle at the top of the mountain. Equipment stockpile now. We're gathering equipment that we don't need today because today is not the day of the battle. The battle is when we hit the apex, depending on who you believe, 14 days to 30 days from today. And also, we need a social acceptance of the time expectation. We're all anxious. We're all tired. We're all fatigued. It's been all bad news for a long time. Our whole lifestyle has been disrupted. Everybody wants to know one thing. When is it over? Nobody knows. Well, president said by Easter. This one said by this. Nobody knows. You can have a hypothesis, you can have a projection, you can have an opinion, but nobody knows. But I can say this, it is not going to be soon. If our apex is 14 to 21 days, that's our apex. You then have to come down the other side of the mountain once you hit the apex. So calibrate yourself and your expectations so you're not disappointed every morning you get up. Yesterday, we met with the entire state hospital system, Dr. Zucker and our team. First time they were all in one place. And we said to the hospital system, look, what I just said to you, we're dealing with a war. We're dealing with a war we've never dealt with before. We need a totally different mindset and organizational transformation. We can't do business the way we have always done business. We need an unprecedented sense of cooperation, of flexibility, communication, and speed. And that's what we talked through yesterday, and we have to do it now. The healthcare system is one of those balkanized systems. It's like our state education system. It's like our criminal justice system. It's in place. It's fragmented. They have their own identities, their own associations. It's regionally organized. That all has to change. We don't have the ability to meet the capacity of our healthcare system as an entirety. That assumes the healthcare system is working as an entirety. That's not how the healthcare system is organized now. We have New York City hospitals, and then we have Long Island hospitals, and then we have Westchester hospitals, and then we have upstate hospitals. That has to go. Even in New York City, you have two basic hospital systems in New York City. You have the private hospitals, voluntary hospitals, about 160 of them, which are some of the finest healthcare institutions in the United States of America. You know, this is Mount Sinai, Columbia Presbyterian, et cetera. Some of their members are also upstate, but they're the large private institutions. Greater New York Hospital Association. Ken Raske runs that association of 160. You then have, in New York City, the public hospitals. The New York City Health and Hospitals Corporation. They are 11 public hospitals. They are a universe, and then you have the private hospitals as a separate universe. The 11 public hospitals are the hospitals that in many ways have always been under greater stress and greater need. We have to get those two systems, the private system and the public system in New York City, working together in a way they never did before. The distinction of private, public, that has to go out the window. We are one healthcare system. On top of that, it can't be the downstate hospitals and the upstate hospitals and the Long Island hospitals. When we talk about capacity of beds, when I say we now have 75,000 beds, that's a statewide number. That means those beds have to be available to the people in New York City or Nassau, even if those beds are up in Albany. So combining that whole system, and you're no longer just the Western New York hospitals or the Central New York hospitals. It's one coordinated system. It's much easier said than done, but we have to do it. On top of that, you have to overlay the new federal beds that came in that are an entirely new component. We have Javits Center, 2,500 beds. We have the USNS Comfort, 1,000 beds. We're planning other federal facilities. These all have to be coordinated on top of the existing hospital network. So you see the organizational situation that we're dealing with. And let's be honest and let's learn from the past. We know where we have to focus. We know where we're going to have problems in the next hospitals, because the hospitals that have the least capacity, that have already been stressed, are the hospitals that are not going to be able to handle the additional load. That is a fact. You know which hospitals were struggling. We do reports all the time about the financial capacity of hospitals and what hospitals are in stronger versus weaker position. The hospitals that are in a weaker position are the hospitals that are going to suffer when they then carry an added burden. That was Elmhurst Hospital. It happened to be a public hospital. It happened to be a public hospital in a place of density. It happened to get overwhelmed. And that's what, then you saw the burden on the staff. You saw the emotion. You saw the stress. That can't happen. And that's what we talked about yesterday. And people said, well, Elmhurst isn't my responsibility. Elmhurst is a public hospital. The city runs it. I don't run it. It's New York City. It's not a private hospital. I don't care which link breaks in the chain. The chain is still broken. It doesn't matter which hospital, which link. Any link breaks, the chain breaks. The healthcare system is a chain. It breaks anywhere, it breaks everywhere. That has to be our mentality. We laid out a full plan on how to do facility development, how to move people among hospitals so nobody gets overloaded, shifting patients, shifting staff, shifting supplies. None of us have enough supplies. Okay, then let's pool our supplies and let's put them out to the people who need them. And just because one hospital happened to have found a vendor from China who delivered 5 million masks, let's share those masks. And we talked about that yesterday. We also talked again at length about ventilators, which is, everybody knows, is a key piece of equipment, identifying all the ventilators in the state, who has them, who has them in a stockpile, who ordered them, who expects them to come in, and we'll have one stockpile of ventilators that we can distribute for everyone who needs them. We also talked about splitting of ventilators because that's a technology that does exist. It's been used before. It's not ideal. You take one ventilator and it's used for two patients. The federal government is a partner in this, obviously. I spoke to the president again yesterday about this situation. I spoke to the vice president. I spoke to Jared Kushner. The White House has been very helpful. We have to get the federal agencies on the ground to understand how this operates, especially FEMA, because we have to be coordinated and people have to know what they're doing. And this is no time for anyone to be learning on the job. And we're going to be working through that today. PPE, same thing. We want to know what everybody has. One stockpile would distribute it fairly. Testing. How do we get out? When does this end? This ends when we get a fast-track test, an at-home test, a 15-minute test, and people can then find out when they can go back to work because they're negative. We're working on additional testing. As I said, the Department of Health has a new test, but that's when this ends. We're also working on the new medications. We're leading the country in many of those developments. We have saliva testing now. We're working on the antibody testing, and we're working on the plasma testing at the same time. We put together a central coordinating team. It's going to be led by the Department of Health. Westchester is on it, Greater New York is on it, Haines is on it, New York City is on it, Long Island is on it. If the federal government is going to participate, they have to be part of this team because we have to know what we're doing. And I don't want FEMA coming in and blowing the coordination of what everyone is trying to do. The coordinating team is going to organize upstate, downstate transfers, set patient loads for hospitals, right? So if one hospital gets up near a overload capacity, let's call it, those hospitals start to send patients to other hospitals before they get up to their max. within the New York City public hospital system, within the greater New York private system, and then among the different systems. It's a whole different mentality, but we have to do it. We said two missions. One was hospitals. Second was individual responsibility. Individual responsibility is about discipline, it's about selflessness, and it's about being informed. The basic point is stay at home. The point is stay at home. I know it's hard to stay at home. And I know everyone thinks, you know, I can go out and I can be smart and I won't get infected because it's me. I'm a superhero. It's not going to be me. That is not true. And it's not just about you. It's not just about your health and your life that you're playing with here, my friend. You can infect other people. So I've been trying to communicate this many different ways for many days. We still see people coming out who don't need to be out. Even for essential workers, people have to be careful. And again, I've been trying to communicate that everyone is subject to this virus. It is the great equalizer. I don't care how smart, how rich, how powerful you think you are. I don't care how young, how old. This virus is the great equalizer. My brother Chris is positive for coronavirus, found out this morning. He is going to be fine. He's young, in good shape, strong, not as strong as he thinks, but he will be fine. But there's a lesson in this. He's an essential worker, member of the press, so he's been out there. If you go out there, the chance that you get infected is very high. I spoke to him this morning, and he's going to be quarantined in his basement at home. He's just worried about his daughter and his kids, that he hopes he didn't get them infected. You don't really know Chris. You know, you see Chris, he has a show on night, 9 o'clock on CNN. But you just see one dimension, right? You see a person in his job. And in his job, he's combative and he's argumentative and he's pushing people. But that's his job. That's really not who he is. He's a really sweet, beautiful guy. He's my best friend. My father was always working, so it was always just me and Chris. And he's a lawyer also, Chris. He's a lawyer because growing up, the decision point came to what do you want to do after college? And my father was a very strong personality. And my father basically suggested forcefully to Chris that he should be a lawyer. It was a different time and a different place, you know. Now, my daughters, Kara, who's here, you know, they all follow their individual stars. This is their destiny, which is right. If you had said to my father, I want to follow my individual star, he would say, yeah, you can follow your individual star right out that door. You know, that's what he would have said. So Chris went to law school. But he never really had a desire to practice law. He calls me when he's about 26. He's at a law firm. And he said, you know, I don't want to be a lawyer. I said, yeah, I know, but you are now a lawyer. You are. He said, yeah, but I don't want to be a lawyer. I said, what do you want to be? He said, I want to be a journalist. I said, you want to be a journalist? I said, it's too late. You're a lawyer. You have to pay law school bills. You didn't go to journalism school. It's too late. No, no, I think I can do it. And God bless him. He quit the law firm, went to work for Fox TV, which is a whole separate conversation in the House, and then worked his way up. He's at CNN. He does a beautiful job. But a sweet guy, and now he's quarantined in the basement, but he's funny as heck. He says to me, even the dogs won't come downstairs, he says. So, but he is concerned about his wife and his kids. But The reason I raise it is he's smart. He social distancing, yes. But you wind up exposing yourself. People wind up exposing you, and then they find out they're positive a couple of days later. And I had a situation with Christopher 2 weeks ago that I even mentioned. My mother was at his house. And I said, that is a mistake. Now, my mother is in a different situation. She's older, and she's healthy, but I said, you can't have mom at the house. And he said, no, mom is lonely. She wants to be at the house. I feel bad. She's cooped up in the apartment. I said, yeah, I feel bad. She's cooped up in the apartment, too. But you bring her to your house, you expose her to a lot of things. You have the kids there. You have your wife there. You're coming and going. Your wife is coming and going. And you could expose mom to the virus. And love is sometimes a little, needs to be a little smarter than just reactive. And we had a whole discussion. In truth, now he's informed, I'm informed. Was that dangerous? Was that not dangerous? So I went back to Dr. Zucker and I said, look, we have to tell people, what are the rules? How does this work? That's when I came up with Matilda's Law, and I said I named it for my mother. And it was very clear about people who are older and what they should be exposed to. My brother, that was 2 weeks ago, if my brother still had my mother at his house, again, out of love and comfort, and my mother wanted to be at the house anyway, by the way, she didn't want to be sitting at home in an apartment. So she would have been doing what she wanted to do. He would have been doing what he wanted to do. It would have seemed great and harmless. But now we'd have a much different situation. Because if he was exposed, chances are she may very well have been exposed. And then we would be looking at a different situation than just my brother sitting in his basement for 2 weeks. So think about that, right? My brother's smart. He was acting out of love. Luckily, we caught it early enough. But it's my family. It's your family. It's all of our families. And this virus is that insidious. And we have to keep that in mind. Keep in mind Matilda's Law. Remember who is vulnerable here. And protect them. You want to go out and act stupid for yourself? That's one thing. But your stupid actions don't just affect you. You come home, you can infect someone else, and you can cause a serious illness or even death for them by your actions. And people have to really get this and internalize it, because it can happen to anyone. 2 weeks with my mother and Christopher. Today is a very different situation. Last point, there was nothing that I have said different since I started these briefings. And there's nothing that we have learned that is different since I've started these briefings. We know what to do. We just have to do it. It is individual discipline to stay at home. That's what it is. It's discipline. No social distancing. It's discipline. Well, I'm bored. I know. I'm bored. It's discipline. Making this healthcare system work, that's government skill, that's government performance. That's saying to that healthcare system, I don't care how it worked yesterday. I don't care whose turf this is. I don't care whose ego is involved. I'm sorry. We have to find a way to work a better way. It's a time to say to that federal government and to FEMA and HHS, you have to learn how to do your job, and you have to learn how to do it quickly, because time is not our friend. It's about a social stamina. This is not 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks. Okay? This is not going to be an Easter surprise. Understand that and have the stamina to deal with it. And it's unity. Let's help one another. New York needs help now. Yesterday, I asked for healthcare workers from across the country to come here because we need help. We will pay you, and more importantly, we will return the favor. This is going to be a rolling wave across the country. New York, then it'll be Detroit, then it'll be New Orleans, then it will be California. If we were smart as a nation, come help us in New York. Get the equipment, get the training, get the experience, and then let's all go help the next place, and then the next place, and then the next place. That would be a smart national way of doing this and showing that unity. And unity meaning we're not, I know this is a political year and everything is a political backdrop and Democrats want to criticize Republicans and Republicans want to criticize Democrats. Not now. Not now. There are no red states. There are no blue states. The virus doesn't attack and kill red Americans or blue Americans. It attacks all Americans. And keep that in mind, because there is a unifying wisdom in that. Any questions? Let's do on-topic questions first. If anyone has any questions on local issues, we'll do that afterwards.
How many extra healthcare workers are on the ground right now? Are all the New York workers who want to work on the ground? We're hearing of some people who are trying to apply and are in New York and they're not getting answers from the state about, you know, or any responses about when that'll happen.
Yeah. Well, let's remember what we said. We have now, a few days ago, we put out the question is, are all healthcare workers working? The problem is healthcare workers are working too much. They're overstressed. They're working too many shifts. They're afraid to go home. They may bring the virus home. They're under immense physical and emotional stress. We put out a request a couple of days ago to ask retirees to come forward. We have now about 78,000 people who said that they would help. God bless the state of New York and God bless humanity. We now are working with the hospitals, and we did this in the meeting yesterday also, sorting those 78,000 people by region and by expertise across the state. And we have a portal that Jim or Howard can explain, because we then have to link them up with the hospital, right? We have the 78,000 pool. You then have to coordinate that with the hospital in that region with those skills. And that's what we're doing now. Jim, you want to mention?
Governor's right. So today the portal will be launched and live. The 78,000 or so, we have to do some pre-checking. So we checked for licenses, discipline, and those people who didn't have a license or had disciplinary issues were taken out so the hospitals could more easily access the workforce. And as the governor said, they're broken down by region, by discipline, and now they can go in. And what we're trying to do is prioritize the availability of the portal to the hospitals that need it the most right now, who have that need some extra help in the field. But we're working very closely with the entire system, like the governor said, to make sure we're linking up those new healthcare workers to those needed facilities. So it will be live today.
And is that connected with the out-of-state workers who are coming?
It's everyone, everyone. So what we're trying to do is prioritize the in-state workers, which we have by region. So we know the potential healthcare workers in every region of the state, where they are, what their status is. We want to get those people in first because they're here in New York. We want to prioritize actually the New York regional, downstate regional employees, because we know that they're closer to those facilities that are in need now, and we're going to need the upstate employees potentially later. And then we have the out-of-state employees that are potentially, we're trying to keep those folks close too. So looking at the folks from New Jersey, looking at the folks from Connecticut and other places there where they don't have to travel from long distances.
What's the timeline for getting those people on? Are there any concerns about individuals who are over, you know, who are elderly helping?
We are looking at age, and we're going through a background. We have about 175 people doing backgrounds on every person who comes into the portal, and the hospitals we're working with as well will also do their own checks to make sure the person's up to it. So if they may not be up to one job, they may actually be up to another job, so we're making sure we have some cross-coordination there as well. And some of the hospitals could potentially have some of these folks in needed areas by Thursday.
Governor, new figures that are coming in. Have you any more new projections as to when the apex might hit in New York City and the state as a whole?
When does the new apex hit? That is the $64,000 question. We have literally five models that we look at. It's true to say almost no two are the same. The range on the apex is somewhere between, let's say, 7 to 21 days. If you look at all five, it's 7 to 21 days from now. And look, Jesse, I say this doesn't mean no good. What is it, 7 to 21? The range is too broad. Do I have 7 or do I have 3 weeks? There's all sorts of variables that they're looking at. You know, on one hand, you would think they would be able to tell because you have the China model, you have the South Korea data, et cetera. But then you have variables here. How effective is the social distancing? How many people are actually staying home? How does the density relate? So there are variables. But it goes from the apex estimate, 7 to 21. That's not the only estimate that varies. They then vary on how many beds you would need, right? We have 53,000 beds statewide if we operated as a state. We mandated 50% more beds, so now we're up to 75,000 beds. All of them say you need more than the 75,000, and the high estimate is 140,000. The ventilator estimate among those projections goes from 10 to 40,000. Are those right, Jim? Do you remember, Howard?
It's roughly 20 to 40,000 on most average projections. Correct. In addition to what we have.
You're going to talk about the hospitals coordinating them. One of the executive orders that you signed actually will let you put in a receiver into somebody's hospitals if they don't meet that 50% threshold or even go above that. Do you foresee having to do that, and what would that allow you and Dr. Zucker to do?
The hospitals have been cooperative. The question is, we have the ability to appoint a receiver if a hospital is not being cooperative. The hospitals have been cooperative. We put out that rule that you have to add 50% capacity. They all added 50% capacity. They've all responded. We're sending out a rule today that says, I want to know your stock, what you have in stock, what your stockpile is, what your inventory is, because we really need to share. You know, nobody has enough, so like everybody put everything into the middle in a pot, and then we'll distribute it. We're doing that. It's not, Joe, going to be as much they're not listening. It's going to be their capacity level. Right? You have, let's take downstate New York. You have about 170 hospitals. If we sat here 2 months ago, we could have graded almost all 170 hospitals, and you would have had some stronger and some weaker. As a general rule, the public hospitals would have been on the weaker spectrum, less financing, et cetera, history of being more troubled. You now put weight on all 170. Even if you put the equal amount of weight on all 170, you're going to see a different reaction in the hospital depending on the underlying strength of that hospital. You put a differentiated weight, well, you happen to be in Brooklyn and there happens to be more density in Brooklyn, and that hospital gets more weight, you'd get a different variable. But in general, what you're going to see is the hospitals that were stressed can't take the stress, right? It's not even a medical concept. The works with personalities too. The personalities who are having trouble dealing with stress are having more trouble dealing with this stress. So the health and hospital corporations, what I said to, which are the public hospitals, I said to the private hospitals, you have to help them. And we have to watch when they get up near capacity, transfer patients. Elmhurst got up to capacity. You had other public hospitals that had open beds. We have to get better and faster at transferring patients to other facilities, right? A perfect system, everybody's at 51%. Everybody's at 60%. Everybody's at 80%. Not some people are at 40% and some people are at 110%. That's not the way the system is organized right now. They all talk, you know, they all have, but they're different fiefdoms, they're different systems. And that, you know, you almost have to shock the system into actually saying, okay, we're really going to operate as one.
So that order gives you to wait. If you don't see them making those shifts, gives you to wait to go in and basically demand it?
Yes. But look, no hospital is going to say, I want to be over capacity. It's just they didn't have the cooperation or the system to call someone up and say, you know, I'm drowning. I need to have somebody else accept 150 patients. And that's going to have to be managed into the system because it's something we never did before. As I run, because we've never been here, you know. Normally you have beds that are hospitals fighting for patients because patients are revenue, right? So you never had a situation where they said, I'm going to send you patients. They wanted the patients. They wanted the revenues. So this is a much different situation. I'm sorry.
Have New York City area patients been transferred to upstate hospitals no. yet?
No. When first, we have levels of sort of triage. First, we're going to try to bring upstate staff down to New York State hospitals. It's one of the requests we're going to make today. You have upstate hospitals that are nowhere near capacity. Send your staff down to New York City hospitals. Worst step, you're over capacity in all New York City hospitals. You've redistributed the load. You're still over capacity. Then send people to the upstate hospital. Is that right, Howard?
That's correct.
What will be the cost for those types of transfers, and how does the staffing work with union issues? Who's paying the staff that comes upstate? Who makes the decisions about whether
it would all be voluntary?
All be voluntary. Who's going to pay the cost for?
Well, we're all paying the cost, right? The hospitals are paying the cost. The state is paying the cost. And I said to them, look, frankly, we'll figure out the cost because. This is about saving lives, and I'm not going to get, you know, who pays the bill should not determine whether or not people live or die. So I said, do whatever we have to do to save lives, and then we'll figure out the bill afterwards.
You previously said that the state has 3,000 ICU beds. How much has that grown at this point? You have 2,700 people in the ICU so far, leaving 300 beds.
No, I said I needed 30,000.
Right, so how many
beds
do we have now?
Well, that's an interesting question. We have ordered 17,000 from China.
Ventilators?
Yes.
So.
That we would pay for, roughly $25,000 each. By the way, anyone who says, oh, maybe you don't need that many ventilators, you're saying 30,000 ventilators. You don't need that many. You don't really believe you need that many. You know how you know I really, really believe that number? Because we are paying $25,000 per ventilator, and we are broke. And the last thing I want to do is buy a single ventilator that I don't need. The complexity with ventilators is we ordered 17,000 from China. So did California, so did Illinois, so did the federal government, so did Italy. And what's happening is China, the orders into China are very slow in coming out. Exactly how and why, we're not sure. It's just that they have such a tremendous demand. Of the 17,000, we only have a firm expectation on 2,500. Is that right, Kara? Yes. Only have a firm expectation on 2,500.
When are those supposed to come in? And
they're supposed to come in over the next 2 weeks.
So that means that the ICU capacity will then increase by 2,500?
Yes. No, the ventilator capacity increases 2,500. An ICU bed in this situation is essentially a bed with oxygen and a ventilator. But you can't have an ICU bed in this situation without a ventilator.
Will that be too late,
though, to address the surge if it's within 2 weeks?
It depends if it's 6 weeks or 21 days, right? That's what we're dealing with. And you can't accelerate the orders anymore from China. When we go back and do a retrospective, and I don't want to do it now, but look at the bizarre situation we wind up in. Every state does its own purchasing. So New York is purchasing, California is purchasing, Illinois is purchasing. We're all trying to buy the same commodity, literally the same exact item. So you have 50 states competing to buy the same item. We all wind up bidding up each other and competing against each other, where you now literally will have a company call you up and say, well, California just outbid you. It's like being on eBay with 50 other states bidding on a ventilator. And you see the bid go up because California bid, Illinois bid, Florida bid, New York bids, California rebids. That's literally what we're doing. I mean, how inefficient. And then FEMA gets involved and FEMA starts bidding. And now FEMA is bidding on top of the 50. So FEMA is driving up the price. What sense does this make? The federal government, FEMA, should have been the purchasing agent, buy everything, and then allocate it by need to the states. Why would you create a situation where the 50 states are competing with each other, and then the federal government through FEMA comes in and competes with the rest of it?
Governor, how do non-coronavirus emergencies factor into these plans to better coordinate the healthcare system? Presumably with first responders getting overwhelmed, you know, heart attacks.
Oh, look, Zach, we're learning lessons. You know, necessity is the mother of invention. We're learning things here that, it's not that we're learning things here. Anyone could have told you a lot of these things, right? The situation I just explained with purchasing, did you really have to learn that 50 states shouldn't compete against 50 states and then FEMA shouldn't come in late and then compete with 50 states? You know, it's not like you had to go to the Harvard Kennedy School to learn this, right? Should you really have a hospital system in New York State where you have private hospitals, you have these struggling public hospitals, there's two separate systems, the upstate is separate, Long Island is separate. Shouldn't you have planned a comprehensive system? Yes, but the commercial barriers to that, the political barriers to that, were so intense that if you didn't have a disaster, an emergency, you couldn't break through them. Conversation I had with these hospital leaders yesterday in that room, if it was not for the coronavirus, I would have never made it out of that room. I mean, what I was saying was so antithetical to the foundation of the business of healthcare in this state, which, by the way, is a multi-billion dollar business. It's right, it was common sense, but sometimes you need the emergency to force change that would be very, very difficult otherwise.
Like, are there specific efforts to shore up the capacity of the healthcare system to handle non-coronavirus related emergencies?
Sure. So the healthcare system is working on all those other areas as well, and regularly, pretty much every day, I've spoken to doctors and nurses who are working on the front lines, and all of those other patients, whether the person with a heart attack, the person with the stroke, the system is continuing to move forward. It is stressed, as the governor has said, the system is stressed, but the patients are cared for. Those other emergencies are getting cared for as well. Just put a strain on the system.
Let me give you an analogy. If I said to you, look, I know normally you write for your outlet and then there are other outlets, but we have a situation, and you're going to write, and you have to give it to all the other outlets. What you write is no longer just for your publication. You have to give it to all the other outlets, because we don't have 10 people who can come. You have to write for everybody else. If I said that in the normal course of business, forget it. If it was an emergency and you were the only reporter there, then you would do it. And that's true in so many different situations. You know, you're violating basic commercial rules here and business rules and practices. And I'm a local government and I'm in charge. And, you know, to override all that garbage, you really need extraordinary times.
From the White House or their states on your idea for ventilators to get sent to New York and then other hot spots. The Illinois governor was talking about it this weekend and said that there's, you know, questions about when the next hot spot would get the ventilators if that moves forward.
J.B. Pritzker, your Governor Pritzker, he's a good man. He's a good friend of mine. He does a beautiful job. He's right. You'll have curves, right? You have a New York curve, you'll have an Illinois curve, you'll have a New Orleans curve. How do you know the New York curve is going to end before the Illinois curve peaks? You don't. You don't, for sure. You know, basically, there's going to be a spatial sequential factor. But you don't know that we're going to be effectively done before Illinois ramps up. So it can't be literally New York has all the equipment, Illinois has none, and then we run to Illinois with the equipment. It can't be that literal. But essentially, it would work, right? And the alternative is also true. Not everybody should have to buy everything. Once we get through this and we have whatever we wind up with, 15,000 ventilators and 15,000 ventilator splitters and 1,100 BiPAPs, you know, if we can help someone else, let's help somebody else.
Governor, about one out of every eight New York City police officers called in sick this morning. Are you worried about staffing of law enforcement in New York City? And conversely, would you consider sending the state police to help with that?
Oh, I'm worried about staffing. Yes, my word, yes. You're going to see it with healthcare workers. You're going to see it with for all first responders. Look, it's back to my brother Chris. Yeah, if you are out there, your chance of getting infected is very high. Yes, and then we'll do whatever we need to backfill. If we need state police, I would do that.
You did talk about forming like some sort of consortium with states. Is that still possible? Is that still doable?
What's happening, Nick, is it is almost impossible to buy a ventilator. To the extent anyone is successful in buying ventilators, FEMA basically came in and is now capturing the market. Because the ventilators are coming out of China, and FEMA basically bigfooted the states in China. So to the extent anyone is buying it, it's FEMA. And that's why the federal distribution is going to be so important, because they are the only ones. I can't buy a ventilator. I can't buy a ventilator. Whatever we're willing to pay, I can't buy a ventilator. So it really comes down to how the federal government distributes it, and that's why it's so important. Let's do someone who hasn't asked the question.
Governor, what happens when the state runs out of ventilators? Where do we decide to get some?
When the state runs out of ventilators, where do I decide to get some?
No. How will the state decide who gets ventilators if we run out and we have too many patients that need them?
Well, first, I don't even want to think about that consequence. I want to do everything I can to have as many ventilators as we'll need.
Well, I did think 7 days. Have you developed into a
7 to 21 days. No, there's no protocol. We're working to get as many ventilators. And we have now a number of options. We have We're looking at all the ventilators all across the state. We are then redeploying anesthesia machines as ventilators by changing a vent. We're then doing this ventilator splitting, which effectively turns one ventilator into two by literally running two tubes. We're using, Northwell developed an idea to use a BiPAP machine. We've ordered 7,000 of those. So we're still in it. We're creative and we're working and figuring it out. And I still am hopeful that at the end of the day, we have what we need.
Do you plan on signing an extension bill so that state employees will get paid on time?
I plan on signing a budget. Do you know, can the, Rob, can the state employees, when we pass a budget, the state, if we pass a budget on time, the state employees get paid, right?
Yeah. The comptroller currently has the legal authority to make the payments now, right? The payments that are due tomorrow and today, those are actually for payroll from 2 weeks ago. So the comptroller presently has the authority. They have a technical issue with their computer system that they need to deal with, but they have the authority to make those payments today. It has nothing to do with when the budget is passed. The budget is always passed on the 31st or the 1st of each year. So that is a relative comptroller's office issue.
Even if the pay period begins in the next fiscal year?
Yes, that's right. They have sufficient appropriation authority to make those payments presently.
This is going to be delayed, though, because just the way the pay period fell this year, right?
No, it has nothing to do with how the pay period fell. They presently have the authority to do it. They presently have full legal authority and appropriation authority to make the payments.
Never not paid the state employees. Even when the budget was late. Yes. Budget questions.
So what's the update with the budget at this point?
No update. See how easy?
It's new. It's coming.
It's either coming or it's not coming. We are where we are. You know, the numbers are what the numbers are. The numbers don't lie. The numbers leave you few alternatives. Federal government says they're going to provide funding. If they provide the funding, then the next few months we should have some additional money. But am I going to say to the people of the state, I believe the federal government is going to deliver money to the state government? Heard it before, and it didn't happen. So I'm not going to count on money that we don't have.
Right, and it doesn't look
especially
like
when the political process is the process that's supposed to deliver the money.
And it doesn't look like there's going to be a new relief bill anytime soon, at least by tomorrow. So what options are left now for the state when it comes to what spending is ultimately going to be cut here?
It's all sort of, it's interesting because it's all basically contingent. We have the budget. We do a budget on the projections we now have. If we get more funding, we increase the allocations. If we don't get more funding, we reduce the allocations. That's basically what the budget says, right? It's essentially honest and transparent in a way. I'm starting the year, I'm earning $15,000 a year. I don't know what I can pay you because I don't know what I'll be earning as we go through the year. The boss tells me he's going to give me a raise. I don't know if I should believe him or not. Some people say there's going to be a cut. I don't really know. So here's the budget. I'm making $15,000. If I get a raise, I will give you the raise quarterly as I get it. If I get cut, I will give you less quarterly as I get cut. That's all you can do.
The legislature going to give you that authority? Have they agreed to that?
I don't care who does. Let them come and cut a budget. How fast you think? Do you really believe that they want to come back here and cut the budget? I give them total authority to cut the budget.
They can come back.
Come back, tell me to cut the budget.
Now, are you satisfied that the unemployment system is working as smoothly as you would like to see it?
No.
People are able to.
It is not. It is not working as smoothly as I would like to see it. It's compounding people's stress. You're unemployed. You're trying to get on some darn website. You can't get through the website. We have companies working on it. We have literally hundreds of people working on it. I apologize for the pain. It is must be infuriating to deal with. I am telling you, we have every technology company working on it. We're spending a lot of money. The site is so deluged that it keeps crashing because you literally have hundreds of thousands of people at any time trying to get on the site, and it continues to crash. Do you have any update on that? Do you, Rob?
Just the numbers. We usually get 50,000 calls a week. We got 1.2 million calls yesterday and 7.8 million calls last week. So that's just the order of magnitude. But as the governor said, we have all resources devoted to improving the system.
1.2 million calls.
Is that e-callers or just people calling repeatedly?
Well, you don't know unless you...
500 times.
Usually there are 50,000 a week. Yesterday alone, 1.2 million. Last week, over 7 million. So that's the order of magnitude, and that's the volume that we're dealing with. But as the governor said, we're putting all the resources in to improve the system and be responsive.
Governor, there's 123 guards and 14 inmates at state prisons who are positive for corona, but DOCS is not saying where those guards or where those inmates are. Is there a reason for that? That would seem to be counter to public safety, no?
I've never heard that, Jesse. I'll check. It's the first I've heard of this. Anyone, excuse me one second, anyone who hasn't asked a question or wants to ask a question?
And rent relief for people overall. I know that was largely intended for people in residential areas, but does that also extend to businesses like restaurants that may be renting?
We extended it to commercial.
We did. We extended it to commercial.
And how long is that?
You cannot be evicted for non-payment of rent, residential nor commercial, for 3 months. Again, we picked these intervals, and you can say they're somewhat random, but you know, when is it going to end? Nobody knows. Pick an interval. So we said 3 months. You can't be evicted, residential or commercial, for non-payment of rent for 90 days. On that basis, my daughters have stopped paying me rent. I'm not even sure that their finances have dropped significantly, but I think they're just taking advantage of the non-eviction order that I myself posted, and I resent it. But there's nothing I can do about it legally.
Governor, yesterday, the first minor who died of coronavirus. Do we know how old they were, what their underlying condition was? This is someone between the ages of 0 and 17, which is all we can tell so far.
Yes, the person had underlying medical condition.
What kind of underlying?
Well, you know, I usually don't like to give out clinical information, but I can see why the complication of this virus would have caused, a problem for that individual. They were minor.
Right. Well, New York City Health Department puts that information out, but it's 0 to 17 years old. Were they a child, a teenager?
You have health privacy laws that if the doctor doesn't want to, or if he wants to stay in his current occupation, he has to be a little careful.
Marijuana. Be able to get a deal on that here? And
not likely.
What happened? It's just too much to deal with.
Too much, too little time.
What are the top line numbers for the budget? Like
bail reform, we said we've been working. Look, bail reform is something we've talked about until we're blue in the face for 2 years.
I know.
Yeah. Well, you know, you covered it. So bail reform we have to get done. Last question, Zach.
Governor,
but you're going to share this. We agree that you're going to share this reporting with all your colleagues before you post it.
Of course. Governor, what do you
I
say
love when they lie to me.
Renters should do once your 90-day moratorium on evictions ends and they likely owe, you know, several months of rent? You know, unemployment is obviously
we'll deal with that when we get to it. I hear you. There has to be some smoothing. We have to finish the budget to tell you the size of the budget. Condition preceding to knowing the size of the budget, finishing the budget.
Who is the planning for this? You've got the senior senator from New York, as you know, is a minority leader, a pretty powerful guy in the Senate. Is it his fault?
God will determine who is to blame. You and I just deal with the reality. The senior senator will say he is in the minority, which is true. The House is controlled by Democrats. We took a pounding on both bills. We did not get our fair share in what's called the FMAP bill, the Medicaid money bill. And we got the lowest percentage reimbursement, lowest percentage of aid of any state in the United States for this last bill, which was supposed to be providing funding for COVID, but we had the highest number of COVID cases. And we got the lowest percentage of funding. So they'll say politics. I see politics be damned in the middle of this. Thank you.